Welcome to the WWE Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to discussing the current pro wrestling product through all of the good.
AJ Styles is the WWE World Champion!
And the bad.
Number 30. The big dog is gonna hunt!
The WWE Podcast reviews every Raw, SmackDown Live, and WWE pay-per-view event, giving an unfiltered opinion, even sharing some favorite wrestling memories.
Oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin thought he'd come out here and give you a little present right from the bottom of my heart.
Oh! No! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, and this guy's never been the starter! This...
And now, here's your host, the man who doesn't play a bad guy on TV and loves sharing his passion for Roman Reigns' heel turn, Matt Corsell.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is the full SmackDown Live review for August 11th, 2017. I know SmackDown was a few days ago, but I typically do a show on Friday, and I'm trying to do a Raw exclusive review show as well. So I'm trying to pump out two shows a week, one dedicated to each show instead of an all-encompassing one show. So that is the plan moving forward. But next week, I will not be here. I will be unable to do any podcast next week. But that doesn't mean you won't be able to follow along with my opinions or any feedback that I might have about the product as we roll into the SummerSlam week. And you can follow me on Twitter. If you want to see some feedback, go to Twitter at the WWE Podcast. And you can also go to WWEPodcast.com where I will try to blog as well and maybe sneak in some audio. But I'm trying to keep the bar low. That way it's easy to exceed expectations. So just a heads up, guys, in all likelihood, I will not be able to produce a podcast next week. I'm on vacation for a week, and I will be returning the following Saturday, the day before SummerSlam. So that is the plan, and hopefully you guys stick around, and I appreciate all the support. So if you do want to follow me, though, I do appreciate you guys giving me a five-star review and rating, and review and rating on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts, and on Spreaker. So those of you that have Android or iTunes or Apple, whatever you call it, that is where you guys can find me. Doesn't matter what device you have, that is where I will be. And so there is, you know, this was an interesting SmackDown Live with only one week left to promote the SummerSlam pay-per-view. It was quite an interesting week from the standpoint, especially of the main event, which is Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jinder Mahal, at least from the SmackDown side of things. And, you know, this show did not focus around Shinsuke and Jinder. In fact, it ended with a rivalry that should have ended a month ago, and Randy Orton pinning Jinder Mahal clean. Now, I understand that the narrative is, well, Jinder can't win without the Singh brothers. But he's the WWE champion, okay? He is the WWE champion that WWE has been trying to create credibility for and giving the mega push to over the last few months. And him not being able to succeed without the Singh brothers is... They're trying to create a vulnerability... I didn't say that right. Vulnerability. There we go. For Jinder as champion that he could lose at SummerSlam. In all likelihood, though, the Singh brothers will return at SummerSlam, giving him the advantage once again. I'm guessing that they didn't book it as Jinder cheating to win, because that would then extend the Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal saga for who knows how long. And that rivalry has come to a conclusion. I don't think any of us are ready to see any more Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal matches. I think that program is done. I think that this put a bow on the rivalry on SmackDown Live. And yes, of course, the crowd reaction was about 70 for Jinder, 30 for Randy. And I think the announcers had a tough time with it. I don't think that they really knew what to do. They didn't really have any explanation for it. And I think there's a, I mean, there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, Randy Orton isn't exactly hot. He's not exactly the top guy in WWE. He is got the reputation of a lot of potential, but not a lot of production. And it feels like he never has really gotten to where he could be. And he seems at times to be going through the motions. And when you have that kind of guy who's been at the top for so long in main events, you can just plug him in anywhere. He is a phenomenal athlete and is capable of putting on very good matches with anybody at any point. But he's been there for so long. I think the fans were supporting Jinder, number one, because most people in Canada, probably in the Air Canada Center, knew that Jinder is actually from Canada. And number two, it's a fresh face. It's not the same old of Randy Orton, who is, for all intents and purposes, he's kind of boring. It's outside of the RKO out of nowhere, he hasn't really caught fire in quite some time. So I understand why the crowd was doing it, and I think that the announcers didn't really know. But it was a decent match, having Jinder lose clean, as WWE seems to have this tendency of creating their champ or making their champions lose non-title matches on television, is troublesome to me, because I don't like to see everybody on a level playing field. You need to stack your roster vertically. You have to do it. I cannot believe that anybody can beat anybody on any given night. I want to see a vertically stacked roster. Rankings, if you will. Maybe not in a literal sense, but at least creating in the minds of fans, you know, where the performers stack up, the wrestlers stack up. So I think that is important to do. And when you have everybody on a horizontal plane, it doesn't elevate anybody. So that's why, and the good old expression 50-50 booking doesn't help anybody rings true. There's a reason that that expression is used often. It's because it has some merit to it, that you can't book one guy, wrestler X against wrestler Y, for, say, I don't know, and they're in a program for 2 months, and they each have equal number of wins. You can't do it and expect anybody to be elevated. It's almost as if WWE is trigger shy of pulling the trigger on anybody and giving anybody a real chance and a real boost, because they win 1 week, lose the next. Win 1 week, lose the next. And how does anybody create real, not WWE corporate speak momentum that they like to talk about over and over and over and over and over on SmackDown and Raw, that really doesn't exist within the narrative of pro wrestling, but in real life, of really trying to push somebody and get them to be a star, you have to create real, not fantasy, real momentum with that character, that person. And you can't do it by trading wins and losses, which is what so many wrestlers on the roster do. Not to the fault of the wrestlers, it's the fault of creative. And I'm not sure why it's done. Maybe they're gun shy. I don't know. I don't know the expression or analogy for it, but there's a hesitation on the part of WWE to really put the jetpack behind somebody. And to a degree, they've done it with Jinder. But at the same time, Jinder has been on his own island with Randy Orton since he won the championship. While he has the top prize in the game, it doesn't feel like he does. And it doesn't feel like he's really the main focus of the show. I mean, how many times have we seen Jinder actually close SmackDown Live? It just sends the message that Jinder is, while he's the top, he has the top prize in the game, he's not the top focus of the brand, which is contradictory when, you know, within the scope of WWE, and especially SmackDown Live, him holding the WWE Championship belt with so much lineage in that belt. And again, with the Shinsuke Nakamura and Jinder Mahal match, you wouldn't even know these two had, you know, are having a match coming up. I'm outside of the sit down interview with Renee Young and Shinsuke, you know, that, and my God, they forced Shinsuke to say it. They forced Shinsuke to bow down to the almighty WWE brand of saying it was his dream and goal to be here. You know, maybe that's partially true, but can somebody say something different besides kissing corporate asses and corporate brand officers? Chief Brand Operating Officers, Stephanie. Could somebody please, please, just when they arrive in WWE, if they even have start to have any kind of moderate success, can somebody please just say something beyond kissing WWE's ass? That they're just so glad to be here, and it's their lifelong dream and their boyhood or childhood dream to be here in this ring under these lights. Oh my God. Can somebody please get up, rise above that? Shinsuke didn't pander. Shinsuke, I've seen worse. Okay, Bayley was a huge victim of that. It made it to the point of stomach churning, and I've really ranted on the Bayley character. If you guys want to listen to it, it is in my previous show on the Raw Review. I go into depth of why the audience turned on Bayley, and why I think they will continue even outside of wait Bizarro World, because that's what it is. Anytime the crowd disagrees vigorously with the story going on, the WWE audience doesn't have a voice. They can't disagree. If it goes against the grain of what is being presented on TV, it is suddenly Bizarro World. Don't get me started on that. I will not veer off on that, but you guys can listen to my previous show as I talk pretty intensely and passionately about that last show. So, but I would like somebody coming into WWE, anybody. TJ Perkins was a huge culprit of that, and it really is. It's from the outside looking in, WWE has been so PC'd and so modernized to the point of, you know, I think this is the issue with, I mean, I think the big issue is society. And this is a much, obviously goes beyond WWE. WWE is simply staying with the current feel of social media, the sensitivity that everybody has about everything, about race, about ethnicity and everybody's sexuality and sexual preference and transgender bathrooms and that kind of stuff, I think really affects WWE. And I think that is the part that really bothers me, that they have been so influenced by society that they feel a part of it rather than an anti-establishment that made them so successful in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm not saying to be a racist, blood, guts, gore, and sex company. No. But the problem is they just feel like a part of the fabric rather than a fantasy land that people can escape to just relax or be entertained. They just feel so just, yes, corporate. They just feel robotic and not unique. And as I said, just a piece of the fabric of all the issues that are going on and everybody being so sensitive that everybody's so offended by everything and anything that even WWE, this pro wrestling fantasy land, that if anybody has a problem with and parents have a problem with, well, hey, how about you be a parent and not let your child watch something you don't deem is acceptable for them to watch? Instead of blaming the company, how about you blame yourself or look in the mirror and take responsibility for what your kids are watching rather than the content that's out there? What are you going to blame cigarette companies and you're going to blame Bud Light or Anheuser-Busch or all these beer brewing, beer selling manufacturing companies that, I'm against that. Wait a minute. There's always going to be things out there that are not appropriate for audiences that are not of mature age that should be consuming them, whether it's food or content or drinks, whatever. There's always going to be things out there that are not appropriate for those ages. And instead of people taking responsibility and looking in the mirror, they just point to those companies and go, oh, that's bad. They shouldn't do that. They shouldn't do that. Now, WWE used to be that company that you could go to and you'd see Stone Cold, you know, drop a stunner on Trish Stratus or Stacy Keibler or Stephanie McMahon multiple times. And instead now, it's a soft company that the women on the brands, whether it's in a managerial role or wrestling role, are able to slap the male competitors and coworkers, and the men aren't able to retaliate. I mean, personally, I think that's a whole load of crap. That is such, you know what? That's bullshit that they are able to do that. And from a fantasy perspective, I've said this, I do not support domestic violence in any way. I am not a proponent of domestic violence at all. I think it's awful. I think that it is cowardly in the part of, you know, first of all, it goes both ways. When you hear domestic violence, you immediately think of men beating their wives, but it does happen the other way occasionally as well, believe it or not. But when you have a fantasy land that you're able to construct these scenarios, I'm not saying every week, but when it's justified, I will guarantee you the crowd would pop for it. The problem is you have sponsors that are so concerned about the image and Stephanie McMahon worried about the brand and what we represent. And my God, look at all the great works we're doing that we, even though everybody knows it's fake, we can't put a product on TV that would ever contradict anything or make anybody upset. Oh, we can't do anything. We are just so soft. We can't do anything that would maybe upset somebody and it would upset a sponsor. And oh my goodness, it is maddening. And that is the part that really frustrates me outside of the women being able to just slap the man anytime with zero retaliation, zero, which is to me just stupid. It's stupid. You're not, I mean, occasionally swearing, fine. I get it. That is fine. I'm not here to see the F word and the, you know, all this other stuff. I get it. We can go anywhere in here and see that. But the corporate powers that be have really, really, really watered themselves down. And they may just say, well, if you're not able to adjust to the current market trends, you're going to fall behind. I would say this. I would say be different. You can adjust your corporation to fit the needs of your audience without taking this soft approach to everybody being so sensitive about everything. And if you're smart enough to know that this is a fantasy environment, you would realize, hey, this is hilarious. This is cool because I can live in this land and not have to worry about any real repercussions because this is a fantasy. What are you going to start blaming Hollywood? Paramount Pictures? You're going to start pointing the finger at movies? You know, how many movies out there that are R-rated and X-rated and that are awful and 1,000 times worse than any WWE product has ever been in any time in its existence? And are you going to blame them for the issues? Yet they're still massively successful. Massively successful. Horror flicks. How many Saws have there been that those are so gruesome? Hangover. All about sex and getting drunk and waking up and not knowing what happened the next day in Vegas. One of the most successful movies, I wouldn't say of all time, but it's very successful. How many times have we seen a successful movie franchise not be PG, but still be insanely successful? Harry Potter even went to PG-13. So when you take this soft environment, it is turning away the fans that have supported you for how many years, and I'm a lifelong fan, and there are many of us out there that no matter what the product will be, we will stick with it because we are fans of the sport and the genre of wrestling. But the problem is that WWE has become so corporately and society driven that it has now just become, they're not an anti-establishment anymore. They're so soft and, well, we're just part of society. We fit all the visions of everybody and, there's no controversy here. There's no shocking TV because it is hard to shock people nowadays. I get it. Everybody's so desensitized. But in the fantasy land, and I'm saying that in a very slow and almost annoying way, but it's because that is the key word here. Fantasy. Fantasy land. Okay? Fantasy land. Everybody knows it's not real. Everybody knows it's predetermined. So why not take advantage? Take advantage. Be an anti-establishment. I'm not saying racism. I'm not saying domestic violence. But what I am saying is maybe you have storylines that are a little bit controversial, instead of just the formulaic WWE way of presenting rivalries. Men retaliating on women, but only when they are attacked first. I mean, there are things you can do that kind of dance around the lines, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because it will never happen. We have gone too far the other way. too far the other way of everybody so sensitive about everybody's sexual preference and well, or how you identify. Do you identify as a man or a woman? And having transgender bathrooms and all this crap. Just crap. And everybody's on social media, on Facebook, you've seen it, going out there and giving their political views and everybody arguing with each other and everybody has a voice. Well, that was quite a rant. So I apologize to those of you who don't want to listen to all that, but that is truly how I feel. That WWE is missing the boat here, and they have become an extremely soft, socially driven company. Okay. That's that. Let's get a little bit more of SmackDown Live. And, you know, John Cena comes to the ring. He has that mixed reaction and he says he's fired up as the crowd is. And that's why we're here. And any night in this WWE brings moments. My God, they're all about moments, aren't they? They're just so self-fulfilling almost. It's like, don't tell us this crap. These are the things that you say post, you know, like post-match, or if you're doing a DVD or a special for the network, you don't come out there and talk about making history or creating moments. That's so self-fulfilling. I don't know. And John Cena is, okay, you know what? I see myself and feel myself going on another rant, so let's continue. He's talking about the dream match that everybody just incessantly had named this, and yet it was not positioned as such. But nonetheless, Cena found out real quick that Nakamura isn't afraid of anything. Nakamura chant fires up, and so he said there was no foul play or Montreal screw job. He just lost, and that doesn't happen a lot to him. And he shucked the man who earned the right to become champion. So squeaky clean, John Cena, Mr. Hustle, loyalty, respect, and the AOK sign continues to. Continues to just follow that never give up attitude, which has made me want to vomit numerous occasions. Baron Corbin's new music hits and he's on the way to the stage with his Money in the Bank briefcase. He says he's sick and tired of the stupid handshake and dream match. Thank you, Corbin. And all Corbin knows is Cena stuck his nose in his business. And Cena calls him a skinny, fat, overrated dumpster fire. And I guess the crowd really liked that. They kind of clung on to that phrase. And so a challenge is laid out by Cena. But Corbin ends up rejecting it and says he doesn't need to beat John Cena. And that he can take his respect and shove it. All he needs is the WWE Championship and John Cena isn't worth his time. I like it. But the problem was Corbin starts to walk to the back and Daniel Bryan comes out and we end up getting a SummerSlam match made between John Cena and Baron Corbin. So should be interesting. With John Cena leaving again in the fall, you could very well see Baron Corbin win at SummerSlam, but I will be trying to do a SummerSlam prediction show prior to SummerSlam next Sunday. So we have then the Usos and versus Ty Dillinger and Sami Zayn. And the Usos win by submission. And Ty Dillinger ends up taking the fall, if you will. And so the Usos continue. They hit the back of his knee. It looked really brutal, but he's clearly just fine. But it was done very, very well. The Usos are, as I said this, and I've said this week after week, they are really doing well here. They have credibility for the last 6 years that they've been here. And turning heel was the best thing that ever happened to them. And I'm really a supporter of the heel turn in the Usos as heels. They feel much more comfortable and natural as heels because they feel like they're just being themselves. So, all right. We got interference from Big E and Kofi and Xavier who jumped the Usos and retaliated. So, that's a tag team championship match at SummerSlam. And I'm excited for that. I think that these two teams will probably continue the rivalry because there's really not a whole lot of depth on the SmackDown roster right now. So, okay. Let's see here. I'm going through this. Okay. The Fashion Peaks. I mean, I have such mixed feelings on this. I mean, there are some funny points and parts and it is entertaining. Yeah, I will say this, as sometimes bad as these segments could be, there's enough interest And chemistry between Fandango, as he's called Dango, which I love, and Tyler Breeze, it's just that chemistry you can't generate. It just happens. These two are just peanut butter and jelly together. And even if the segment is poorly scripted or hokey, and I know it's maybe even supposed to be as such, but it's maybe so far hokey sometimes that it's bad. And I know sometimes bad is good, but sometimes it's so far bad that it's actually still bad. But these two have it, and I still find myself looking forward to this segment every week, which tells me they're doing their job. And they're still trying to find out who destroyed their office, who destroyed Tully the horse. So all this silly nonsense. And I mean, it is what it is. As I said, I still look forward to it, which says something about the segments. Charlotte Flair versus Lana. And Charlotte is, she has noted on a previous podcast that she, or Charlotte has noted on a previous podcast that she is much more comfortable being a heel. And I think that shows every week. I am a Charlotte Flair fan, but she has clearly become a little bit uncomfortable in the babyface position. I can't blame her. I mean, she's human. She's used to being heel. And if you're more comfortable in a heel role, it's flipping to babyface is a little bit uncomfortable. It's almost like she, you know, as a babyface, she's told and educated herself that, well, if you're a babyface, you got to smile a lot. Charlotte's smiling way too much. I know that that's the protocol when you're a babyface, typically, is you smile more, but it doesn't feel natural for her. Those smiles feel fake. They don't feel real. And so anyway, Charlotte ends up beating Lana fairly quickly as she takes her to task within a few minutes. And Lana continues to be have a 0-5 record, I believe. She has not won a match yet on SmackDown Live. And I don't know what they're doing with Lana right now. I'm not sure. It's an interesting little side note what they're doing with Lana of just not having her beat anybody. I'm interested, though, every week. I mean, I know she's not the best performer, wrestler in the women's side, but I'm still interested. So then we have one of the better segments of the night here with Shane McMahon's Rules of Engagement. And he invites AJ and Kevin Owens out to the ring. And they each have an issue with Shane being the referee because of the history with AJ and Shane this year, of AJ putting Shane's head through the car window before WrestleMania, which, by the way, WWE, thank you for not showing the inside the car view. No need for that. Thank you. But Kevin Owens then brings up Shane versus Shane as a referee back in 1998 at King of the Ring or SummerSlam, when he ended up screwing Stone Cold Steve Austin when he would face Mankind for the championship. That was cool. I believe it was a tournament at the time. But he ends up screwing Shane. Shane ends up screwing Stone Cold and building a case of why they should not have to trust or be able to trust Shane as a referee. So that was a cool little nostalgic moment there. And really well done. The crowd was into this. AJ and Kevin Owens' chants were going back and forth. And eventually, it ends with a brawl of Kevin Owens cheap-shotting AJ. AJ goes for the Pele kick, ends up knocking Shane down. So this is going to be a very interesting dynamic at SummerSlam. I still see AJ coming out on top, Kevin Owens somehow being inadvertently screwed, leading to a Shane versus Kevin Owens match at the following SmackDown pay-per-view. I think that's kind of collectively where I believe we're all going, and I'm fine with it. I'm glad it wasn't done at SummerSlam, and this can go to a little bit more of a B pay-per-view, which I believe it should be in. So, let's see here. We have, as I'm scrolling through, my computer is going very slow, so I apologize. The Carmella versus Naomi match, and footage is shown of Carmella tapping out, and Carmella quickly knees her in the midsection and talks trash. Naomi takes her down and slaps her in the face. Carmella gets out of the ring to recover. And eventually, this match ends with James Ellsworth returning and missing Naomi's foot to interfere by like a second. But Naomi still sold it. And JBL tried to cover by saying, I think Naomi slipped. Because when you look at it, clearly James Ellsworth did not touch Naomi's foot in any capacity whatsoever. So winner by pinfall is Carmella. And so she is the Women's Money in the Bank winner. And so she takes that briefcase to SummerSlam. Does she cash in? Maybe. I think out of Baron Corbin and Carmella, who is more likely to cash in at SummerSlam? I would put my money, no pun intended, on Carmella. I think they're going to milk Baron Corbin's briefcase win a little bit longer, but maybe they both don't cash in. I mean, it's maybe they both do. We're at the point, though, where you have to start considering it as a possibility from every pay-per-view forward here. So then we have a Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal match. As I already went through that. And so you know, Randy wins clean. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, I kind of told you guys that Jinder losing clean is, I'm not a supporter of it, but I get why they did it because otherwise it would have extended Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal and they are done with that rivalry. At least I hope they are. I'll tell you, I did like Randy versus Jinder better than I did Randy versus Bray Wyatt. So there's something to be said for that. So, okay, guys, that is it for today. I hope you enjoyed my SmackDown Live review and my apologies, or maybe not, for my rant about WWE's corporate views and soft nature that they have really, really just kind of tapped out to and thrown in the towel and said, oh, we're just going to go with society instead of being the anti-establishment. And I think people really still are looking for that. They look for something that's different. It doesn't feel like the rest of the fabric of what's going on in the world. Everything just, if you don't follow the path of what everyone else is viewing, you're wrong. And I think that is the one of the issues with WWE is it feels just so soft and so modernized, but not modernized in a good way. You know, you can adjust your company to fit the needs of the audience as you move forward. There's ways to do that. Obviously, sitting still on your laurels is not good for any company, but they have taken the social values and norms and acceptances of the 2017 world views and applied them to the corporate culture, and I'm not a fan, and I think maybe that's the best way to sum it up. So, guys, thank you for joining me. Again, I'm going to try to come back with a prediction show before SummerSlam next week, but if not, everybody have a great week. I'll be on vacation, as I said, and you can also still follow me on Twitter at @_WWE_podcast or go to WWEpodcast.com. where I will be updating and reviewing SummerSlam and my thoughts as I go along as well. So, guys, thank you for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time.